You are listening to the Hirschsprung's Hour on UK Health Radio, where I interview incredible people with a connection to Hirschsprung's disease and other associated conditions, such as IBD, IBS, Crohn's, colitis, and ulcerative colitis. Each week, I bring you a new and exciting interview with people from all walks of life, including charity founders, models, and professional sports people. We go through the ups and downs of having Hirschsprung's with a positive message throughout.
Hello and welcome to episode 124 of Tom's Hirschsprung's podcast. I'm very excited today to be joined by actor, writer, broadcaster, and all-round national treasure, Denise Welsh. Denise, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. That was a nice introduction. Thank you. It makes me sound very clever.
I do love a good introduction.
Very nice.
But thank you so, so much for coming on. I know this is a highly...
It's been a while, Tom, for us to get together, hasn't it?
It has, but you are probably the busiest person I've ever met, I think.
Well, the thing is, I wrapped on a job a couple of weeks ago in a fabulous job, Forever Home, based very loosely on a Graham Norton novel, which we filmed in Northumberland mainly, which is my home turf. So that was gorgeous to film up there. And then so Lincoln, my hubby, said, right, so I might get to see you then at some point when you finish this job. And I went, well, yes, of course. It's just me. I don't know what I've been doing, but I've been up and down, up and down, up and down. I did quite a few acting projects last year and they're all being edited. So I'm getting called in quite a bit to do ADR, which for people who don't know what ADR is, it's when you have to dub your voice onto something that either they're adding, which often happens that there isn't enough information, so they want you to add a bit so there's, say, a scene with me and David Morrissey in Tiptoe. So as soon as the camera goes off me and onto David, I add a line to give a bit more information. And of course, there's quite a few projects. So that has been, they mostly happen in London. So I've been up and down a bit doing that. And, but on tomorrow, we're taking my mum-in-law on a cruise.
Ooh, somewhere nice.
We're going, it's, we've been asked on very kindly by Elegant Cruises. And it's very different to what we've done before. This is, sounds more like a huge yacht. It's for 100 people as opposed to 2,000 people, which is what you're normally on these big boats on. And so I've read very little about it. I'm not a very good tourist in as much as I think, well, I'll just get on there and see what's happening. But we fly to Tenerife, we go to Casablanca, we go to Mias in Spain, and we go to Palma. And so it's cramming a lot into a week, but she loves a cruise, does Jen, so we're taking her on that.
Oh, sounds fantastic. Sounds absolutely brilliant. But we are also here to talk about your son, Louis.
We are.
And to talk about his diagnosis of Hirschsprung's. And for those who've been following the podcast for a while, Louis came on about 18 months ago and he talked about his start with Hirschsprung's. And then I think we got sidetracked and started talking about football a lot. I think I led him astray, unfortunately. And then with a lot of parts of that story, he said, well, you're probably best off asking my mum. So I will. So I guess, would you like to take us back to the beginning?
I will. I'm better asked a sort of open question like that, because with ADHD as well, I go off on a million tangents. So please don't think it's being rude to pull me back when I'm talking about something completely unrelated. Okay, so I have two children, as you know, Matty, who is 37, coming up next week. Oh, God, next week. And Louis, who is he 24, 25?
25.
Born in 2001, that's right. A big gap, 12 years. The reason for that gap is because I was 31 when I had Matty in 1989. I had a wonderful pregnancy. I had one of those pregnancies where people say, oh my God, you look so well. Your hair's great. Your skin's great. I love the whole thing of being pregnant. And that was it. And, you know, the scans were all fine and whatever. And sadly, when I had Matty, he was fine. He was nearly 8 pounds. He was fine. And I, unfortunately, had severe postnatal depression. And I was hospitalized and it was awful. And I was on a verge, apparently on a verge of puerperal psychosis, going in and out of lucidity. And it was a terrifying time. And people say to me, how long did that last? And I say, well, 37 years, to be honest, because it is often the key to someone who has a lifetime of depressive episodes. That can be the start. I would like to say, in case there's any people with a new baby or people who are pregnant, it's, you know, I had a very severe case of it. You know, so don't worry about it, because now the help is available straight away. It wasn't then, 37 years ago. It really wasn't, unless you could write to an Association for Postnatal Illness. Doctors didn't know about it. The doctor that I saw, the GP in London, so this is 1989, I was in an almost catatonic state when my mum took me down, and she leant forward, probably a lady about my age now, maybe younger. And she said, well, with that patronizing passive-aggressive smile, she said, well, I had 5 children, dear, and I just didn't have time to get depressed. That's what she said to me. And unfortunately, that was a bit of an attitude then, Tom. Anyway, despite that, I've had a wonderful 37 years when I've been good, but I have had many episodes since then. So myself and the boy's dad, Tim, were too scared to have another one, really. And then I fell pregnant 12 years later. And by that time, I was in my early 40s. I was doing Coronation Street. Tim was 50. But I couldn't not, you know, proceed with it. And thank God I did. So the reason I'm saying this is because it's about the birth. So I had a very, very, very dear friend who's sadly not with us now, called Gordon Faulkner. Gordon was a friend of, we were all mum and dad friends of the school that the kids were at. And Gordon was one of the top gynecologists in the country. So he said to me, look, so that you can psychologically have a completely different birth than you did with Matthew, because nobody knows how many signs are hormonal, how many signs are psychological, what the triggers might be. So he suggested that I had an elective section, because elective cesarean section, because I would be in incredibly safe hands with Gordon. And so that's what happened. So I had had more tests than normal because I was an old mum at 42, nearly 43, a very old mum. So I'd had the amniocentesis and all the scans and everything. And of course, nothing showed up. And I proceeded to have Louis with Gordon, felt in very safe hands, and little 7-pound Louis was born. And I wanted to breastfeed him, if possible, because I hadn't been able to breastfeed Matty because my lactation process stopped as a result of the depression and the panic attacks. So I said, well, you know, I wasn't hung up about breastfeeding. I wasn't one of these women who think, you know, oh my God, you know, you've got to breastfeed your child. I just wanted the experience of it, which, you know, mums will understand. And so we started to try and feed him, and he wouldn't feed. And the nurses would come in to the room and they would put him this way and this way and upside down and all sorts of ways. And he wouldn't feed. So he wasn't feeding and he wasn't pooing. But they said, don't worry, his blood sugars are fine. Often when the baby hasn't been down the birth canal, because you've had a section, sometimes there's a lot of gunk to get rid of, and that's maybe why he's not feeding. Anyway, by the third day, I was very anxious about this. And before you knew it, trying to find something of a comparable color, Louis projectile vomited this electric green vomit across the room, like The Exorcist. And you're aware in the hospital when everybody doesn't want to frighten you, but there is a sort of mass intake of breath that this is not right. So we proceeded to take him to special care. And I was naturally concerned at this point, but not overly worried. So, projectile vomiting. And so we took him to special care. And basically, the hospital I was in at the time, Tom, was Hope Hospital in Manchester. Now, Hope Hospital, I didn't really know the difference at the time. I wasn't thinking about it. It was a medical hospital as opposed to a surgical hospital. So we took him to special care. And basically, they were eliminating everything over a period of days, became 2 weeks. And I would have to walk from my room to special care. And every day it seemed like it got longer, the green mile, I used to call it, because my anticipation of how he was going to be was growing every day. Because sometimes I would walk down there, ring the bell, and I'd get, oh, hello, come on in, it's Louis's mum. And they'd say, well, he's taken a little syringe of milk. So we're going to, he was covered in tubes, little thing. We'll take him out, you can have a little hug, and then, he would bring it up again.
Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So every day I walked there with trepidation, not knowing. Anyway, they did lumbar punctures, to sort of eliminate meningitis. They were doing absolutely everything. And after nearly 2 weeks, I said, look, guys, I don't know how much I can take of this. You know, every day it's not this. I said, I really need to know what it is. And they said, right, we're going to send you with him to Alderhay Hospital in Liverpool. As many people will know, one of the most brilliant teaching hospitals in the world. All I was thinking about was make my baby better. And it was tough as well, Tom, because Matthew was 12. Now, in many ways, as time went on, that was actually a very useful gap. I could go and have a shower. Louis could watch the baby, unlike a two-year-old who's probably sticking pens in his eyes or up his bum, or, you know, what Louis used to do with the dog, sadly, but that's another story. But Matthew needed me as well. And I was very torn. He had his dad, but he needed me. But I couldn't be away from the baby. There was something physically keeping me with Louis that I, because they kept saying, you know, Mrs. Healy, which I was at the time, he'll be all right, you know, if you want to go home and spend a night with Matthew. And I just couldn't do it because the tie was so strong. So anyway, we got him up to Alderhay. And then there was a big process of things went on. Anyway, in case people are falling asleep listening to this, they diagnosed Hirschsprung disease after when he was 3 weeks old. And I had never heard of it, as most people haven't. They told me that it was a condition, and I'm not sure if the statistics are still the same, but they said it was about 1 in 5,000 children would have Hirschsprung. And they also told me, I remember this so clearly, that the first operation was, I think, in Sweden in 1948. And before 1948, Hirschsprung children would have been a child that didn't thrive. So there was no surgery for this condition. And so that's only 10 years before I was born. And to think that 10 years before I was born, he would have been a child that didn't thrive. I mean, it brings a lump to my throat every time I say it. Not only were we at this brilliant hospital, there were also, can you believe this, 3 Hirschsprung research projects going in by 3 worldwide experts at the hospital being done at the time Louis was in. And we were allocated this incredible surgeon called Graham Lamont, who I will obviously be eternally grateful to. He was a top of his game Hirschsprung specialist. I mean, it was just unbelievable. But at the time, all of this wasn't registering. It was just, please make my baby better. They also explained, and unless there's been changes, they can't tell how big the affected bowel is until they go in. So they said, we don't know, but we had learned to do the pull-through. So we would put the little tube up his little bottom, and then we'd have to sort of do the technique to pull it all out. And I remember his little face with the relief. And they said, look, there's a few other things we need to do. So if you would like to take him home for a week, because you're very adept at doing this maneuver. And we did. So we were able to bring him home. I didn't sleep at all. I mean, you know, I didn't sleep, but at least we had him home and everybody could meet him. And I was all right, because that would have been, for everybody involved, a complete nightmare. It didn't mean that I didn't go on to have subsequent episodes. I did, but they weren't necessarily related to the childbirth. It's just that it started a pattern. So there we were, and he was operated on at 6 weeks. To be honest, I can't quite remember what the gap was about, but I remember he was 6 weeks old, and he went in, and my grandson Theo went in to have his tonsils out a couple of weeks ago. A simple operation, as we know, but the little bear sat there with the robe on, going to have general anaesthetic. It's the smells and the noises, and it just takes you back there. Anyway, he had 9 inches of his small bowel was affected. And I remember it's between, God, I haven't talked about this for so long, that trying to explain it to people, it's the, they say between the 5th and the 12th week of pregnancy, that part of the bowel doesn't form. That's when all of that happens, and they don't know why, I don't think, to this day. Anyway, so he had 9 inches taken out. So any Hirschsprung mom will know that you go from no nappies to sort of 25 a day. It was, oh my God. But we took him to Cyprus. I mean, was I crazy? We took him to Cyprus just after the surgery, obviously with permission. Oh my goodness, with mom and dad and my sister and the kids, we all went off there. And they said, it's a very successful operation. When he is a teenager, they said, beware of any stomach pains. They said it will likely be a hangover with a teenage boy. It will likely be a hangover, but don't risk anything. Just be a bit more vigilant and bring them up being a bit more vigilant. They said he will probably all be slightly windier than maybe some other boys, which Louis has relished all of his life. So I've had the queue in Sainsbury's with the very loud noise and him going, Mom, you're embarrassing me. You know, he learned that very, very early on. And whenever he's annoying me and blowing off a lot, and this is now, and I'll say, oh my God, Louis, you're disgusting. He goes, how can you say that to a Hirschsprung child?
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So he's very clever at using it all his life. So after that, it was, everything was fine. You know, we were taking him for his checks and everything. And then when he was 20 months, he got poorly. And my mum's voice was always ringing in my ears of, when they get poorly, it doesn't matter if they go off food, they've got enough reserves to last them a week. Don't worry about that. But if they stop drinking, that's when you've got to worry. And it always, you know, the old sage comments your mum makes that you never forget. And he did. He wasn't taking his juice. And so we called a GP friend again. And we were so lucky that this school that Matty had gone to, quite a few of the parents were doctors. So we did have this pool of pals who were doctors as well, that we would go on the school ski holidays and whatnot with. So David came round, felt his tummy, and he said, oh, okay, I think it's really bad gastroenteritis. So I think you should take him down to your GP now. So we did. He again agreed that it was, but he said, his tummy's very, very hard. I think you should take him up to Macclesfield Hospital. I thought, oh, goodness me. But I didn't worry because Tim and I had both had gastroenteritis. So there wasn't any doubt that that's what it was, but that we all know you've got to be more careful where it's, you know, little ones involved. So off we trooped. They said, yes, it is gastroenteritis, but we're going to keep him in. You can stay with him, but we would just like to keep him in for a few hours. So this was midday. Went on and on and on. And, you know, you can tell your own child when they're getting better, and you can tell when they're not. And it went into the evening, and he was very, very still and floppy and wanted me, but wasn't drinking. And it got to midnight, and I'll never forget this instinct. So again, Macclesfield was a medical hospital, not a surgical hospital, but at this time, surgery didn't come into our minds. It got to midnight, and I got this instinct that I wanted to get him to Alderhay. I had no medical knowledge. I was not in a position to diagnose anything but mother's intuition. And I remember saying to them, this is midnight, remember, So at midnight, I said to them, listen, I'm not trying to be a clever clogs. I just would really, really feel safe if we could get him to Alderhay. And you know, I'll always be grateful. Not one person, and believe you me, I've had run-ins with the NHS subsequently of the many things, you know, right when my dad was sick. But this time I said, I'd like to get him to Alderhay. And without a question, they said, absolutely, if that's what you want, we'll get an ambulance ready. We'll get you in there within half an hour. Within half an hour, we got him into an ambulance. I remember the random conversation with the paramedics about where they trained and da-da-da-da-da, you know, and these things that you remember. We got him to Alderhay, and they took him off, and the doctor came out and said, right, okay, he's gotten straight to the top of the emergency surgery list. We think it's acute appendicitis, which is very rare in a child so young. And I said, okay, how long will he be away? And they said, well, we would say maximum an hour and 20 minutes with appendicitis. 4.5 hours later, he wasn't back. And there was no news from surgery. And they kept saying, if there was something to tell, they would come out and tell you, you know. And Tim had come up at this point and joined me. And anyway, 5 hours later, he came out. They said he's in intensive care, but don't worry, that's where they've got to go after surgery. And they said that he'd had adhesions caused by the previous stomach surgery. Not anybody's fault, but the scar tissue had adhered. And they said to me, they said, if you hadn't got him here, you probably would have lost him within 2 hours.
Wow.
And I had no idea, and nor did Macclesfield, you know. I just, something in me said he wasn't any sicker, he just wasn't getting better. And if they had said, oh, you know, I'm really sorry, we can't just get an ambulance this time, you know, and they didn't. And they said, you got him here, he went straight to the top of the list and he had 2 hours. And needless to say, another older Hay saved his life twice. And he's now 25. You've met him on here. He's an actor. He's doing brilliantly. And when you don't talk about something for a while and then you remember how close he was, and how that instinct on both occasions, the instinct to get him to Alderhay the first time, well, to another hospital, and the instinct to get him there again. And Graeme Lamont did the surgery again. He just happened to be there to do the surgery. I mean, what are the chances of that? Anyway, about, 10 years ago, my God, yeah, he was 15, I think. 10 years ago, we got asked to go to Alderhay to visit some new block. And I said, well, I'll bring Louis. He's 15. You know, he'd probably love to come. And so we went to Alderhay. And when we were there looking around, they said, oh, we've got a little surprise for you. And Mr. Lamont was retiring that day.
No. That's incredible.
Mr. Lamont was retiring that day, and he came out and met Louis. And I said, this is the doctor that saved your life on two occasions. And he said, well, I did have help with another couple of surgeons. I said, well, it was you that I dealt with. I'm grateful to you all. And it was so incredibly moving. And so I'm a patron of Alderhay. Louis is going to become a patron as well. And about, before he went into Stranger Things, so year and a half, or 2 years ago, I guess, we went back up there because they're building a new neonatal ward. And we went up to have a look at it in progress. And I was saying to Louis, God, it's different. But the smell, it was not an unpleasant smell. It's a neonatal ward smell. And it was, funnily enough, it was a reassuring smell this time, because in the past, whenever I'd sort of smelt something like that, it would make me feel a bit uncomfortable, and it didn't. It was like a reassuring smell. Anyway, I'm walking along the corridor with all the probably about half a dozen sort of people on the admin side of the hospital, and we're walking through, and this nurse, I think everybody's older than me, probably 10 years younger than me. But anyway, is there. And she went, oh my God, is that Denise? And I went, hi. She went, hi, man. I was your Louis nurse. And I said, she went, how old's Louis now? Is he about 15? I said, no, he's 23 and he stood here. And she started to cry. She remembered Louis. And I said, do you remember, you used to put L-O-U-I-E above his bed. And I used to go, Annie, it's L-O-U-I-S, like Louis the 15th, like Louis Armstrong. We used to have a laugh about it. But one of the first sentences, little expressions that Louis would say is, did you do, don't de? Because the nurses like Anne would go to him. But the doctors are going to make you better, Louis, because they do, though, don't de? But Louis would go, and his little Scouse accent. Oh my God, it was emotion overload. And that's the story of wow. where he is till now. And we are in touch with them, with Alder Hey. We're going to do a sort of a Hirschsprung type of Q&A sort of thing that they're going to get us to do for the hospital. If there's anything Hirschsprung related going on up there, I will involve you, Tom, of course. Absolutely. Thanks. I definitely will. We told them about your podcast, but I'm sure that you're in, you know, touch with people. But Jennifer, who looks after the sort of more charity side, if there is anything, because just at the time I was then going off to film, so Jennifer and I said we'll talk when I've finished, which will probably be this week, and I can find out exactly what she wants from us. And of course, if there's anything that would benefit you or your community, I'll definitely bring you in.
That would be amazing. That yeah. would be absolutely incredible. Thank you so much.
Of course.
And on Louis' story, I mean, it's an incredible story. And there's one point that you made there about mother's instinct. And saved my life. My mum's instinct saved my life when she realized that.
Tell me about that.
Well, I was not feeding. And I was told everything was perfectly normal. It was, funnily enough, it wasn't on an Easter Monday, as today is Easter Monday. It was on an Easter Monday. And the
Hirschsprung anniversary.
Yes. And I don't think I'll celebrate it.
You've got to laugh, Tom. We'll go back yeah. and laugh at things.
Oh, absolutely. And the GP, it was Easter Monday, didn't necessarily want to come out because it's an Easter Monday. And he went, oh, okay, fine, I'll come out. And then...
At this point, were you newborn?
I was 3 weeks.
3 weeks.
So probably a little bit later than... because usually about 48 hours, I think, now.
Yeah, it was. It was about 3 days when the green exorcist bile happened. Yeah, 3 weeks, yeah.
Yeah, for you. It was, and wasn't feeding, was lethargic, basically body shutting down, you know, and it was my mum's instinct that saved my life. And she, you know, then I was rushed into surgery in Addenbrookes. And it was, yeah, and then kind of...
Oh, so was yours diagnosed quite quickly then when you went in?
Yes, fairly quickly, and then sort of got sepsis, and then heart rate was going through the roof, and yeah, things weren't brilliant at that time, but, you know, 34 years later, I'm all healthy, no more surgeries needed, you know?
I just think that anybody listening to your podcast generally, I mean, you know, how reassuring would I have found something like this? Because, of course, apart from you and I were, you know, your mum and I lucky to have these amazing hospitals, but there was so little known about the condition. I mean, there still is when I say to people, because I remember what they thought it was with Louis at first was Crohn's, because, of course, we're all of a similar family. And Crohn's, I mean, my mum, my late mum, has three siblings. All of her three siblings had Crohn's, and her brother, Tony, was a very late diagnostic case, and he nearly died. And now the boy's dad, Tim, obviously unbiologically related to me, has Crohn's, and my stepson, unbiologically related to me, has Crohn's. It's like, bloody bowly bowels family, my God, honestly. So that's... You know, so that they thought, so I'm very, well, empathetic, quite knowledgeable about Crohn's as well, because so many people in the family have got it. And obviously there are quite a lot of similarities, you know, with that condition. I'm sorry that sun's shining in so much.
No, it's all good, but Crohn's. Yeah. It's an interesting one, because I had a chat with someone called Georgina Merkel, she's fantastic. She's just created Hirschsprungsdisease.co.uk. A new website. All my podcast is up on there. There's loads of really, really good info. You know, not just for new mums, you know, we've got children newly diagnosed, but lots and lots of just really good info on there. She's absolutely fantastic. But she was doing some research the other day into and finding papers linking Crohn's and Hirschsprungs. So it's really interesting that you bring that up.
Well, I just found that certainly with Lewis, because my stepson is, he's between the two. So 25, I think Lewis is 34 and then 37. And 2 years ago, he was rushed into, not Guy's, King's Hospital in London. And that was the other side of the NHS, you know, when it just wasn't working. And I had to step in because he was going to have three times he was down to have surgery, and it was major surgery. There was a huge amount affected for Crohn's. And three times the message that a blue light had come in and stopped the surgery hadn't got to the nurses. So he'd been kept nil by mouth for twice the amount of time, three times. It's a condition that I would say, from what I spoke to a very, very qualified doctor unrelated to Lewis's case, is that with something like Crohn's, the surgery is very, very, very important and serious, but it's not often an emergency. So if your child or a loved one is in for Crohn's surgery, be more vigilant, because they will be the ones who keep getting put down and put down, and malnutrition can get in there. But yes, so just a little tip, you know, as I say, that was just sadly a lack of staff and a lack of communication. But I have been told that it is one of the conditions that will keep getting put back and put back. So yes, so now, of course, all is well, touch wood. And he is, and he's thriving. But I will always be indebted to Alderhay and will always be a part of their team to raise money and do whatever I can in the small way that I can, as will Louis.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And yeah. I know you mentioned about being a patron of Alderhay there, but there's someone else or somewhere else that you also heavily involved in, which is the Abilities in Me Foundation with Gemma. And I've had Gemma on this podcast before. And I talked to her quite a lot. We've become quite good friends over
over
the years, which is lovely. And she's obviously done a book. I think it was about a year ago that her Hirschsprung's book came out, which is fantastic, which I have a copy of here. And I think that's brilliant. But I remember
I met Gemma, Kia and Matt through my brother-in-law, because Lincoln is from London originally, but when he was a little one, they all moved to Stevenage, where of course Gemma and Max live. And Duncan said, my friend Gemma has got these books. You know, the family always do that, you know, because you can imagine a lot of people like you to be involved and a lot of people want to send you things. And much as you would love to be a patron of every charity in the world, Tom, you just can't, you know, for your own mental health, you just can't. And anyway, I said, get her to send me the books. At this point, the Hirschsprung book wasn't out, but I was just blown away with this incredibly simple but hugely effective idea of all of these range of conditions that children can have and an easy to understand book. Because I don't know about you, I'm 68 this year, and I say to people a lot of the time, talk to me like I'm five. Talk to me like I'm a five-year-old, and then I'll understand it. That's what my accountant says. How old are you today? And I go, six. Because I don't understand if he doesn't talk to me like I'm six. So these books are just incredible. And I just was blown away by them. So I said to her, look, my time is limited, but I'll do, you know, whatever I can. I mean, I know that she'd love to get some kind of animated series off the ground, but I have said to her, you know, it's a very, very tricky process to do that. But I'll always support them and do whatever I can. Because he's got 22Q. Now, I mean, even I don't know what that disability is, you know, except that obviously Logan has physical and mental disabilities. He's a lovely boy. Thanks. He's a lovely, lovely boy. But it's very hard being the mom of a severely disabled child. Now, 22Q, that sounds like something from Question Time. Who would know that that's a condition? But to be able to go into school and take each of the children a book about Logan's condition, which they can read with mum and dad or their carer, you know, at home in this glossy picture book, I think it's absolutely incredible. I got a bunch sent to Alderhay as well, up there. So actually, I'll check in on Gemma now you've said that. It's been a few months since I've spoken to her. So yeah, oh, I'm glad that you're involved with her.
I am. She's fantastic. And I love the fact that all the books, because she's really good with rhyming words. And there are some people who listen to it, and there are some people who just, I couldn't do that. It would take me years to work out what rhymes with what. But she can, and she is... she's brilliant. She's brilliant. But no, I do chat to her quite a lot. And
her life's work, you know, and the way that Max and her are involved in, you know, in the community choirs with the kids. And yeah, they're great. I, up until last year, have had a charity ball for another charity called the Gem Appeal, which is for kids with chromosomal disorders, and my friend's kids both had Hunter's syndrome, and they both died before they were 16. And with the work that the Gem Appeal have done, they have been part of extending the life of these Hirschsprung kids, maybe into their 30s and 40s, just with the work that we've been able to pay for a researcher at Manchester Children's Hospital. And we've always had these amazing balls and brilliant cabaret and everything. And Max is a singer as well. They met at Disney, the two of them. So I had Max come up, and he was one of the turns as well. And he did a few songs. So that was great, being able to sort of like merge all of the, you know, the charities to get together.
In terms of, I know Louis's been in Strange Things and has done quite a lot of acting work as well. But I guess, what do you hope for Louis and for Matty's future?
Well, I think, like any parent would say, it would be for them to be happy. They have both followed careers unprompted by us, completely unprompted by us. You know, they were surrounded by actors and musicians growing up, you know, and I'm glad that they've both gone into music and acting separately. They're both incredibly supportive of each other. Matty lives in Los Angeles as well. So, the boys aren't in each other's pockets, but they're there for each other. Matty gets married in July, which we're very excited about. And I mean, very excited about that. And that's wonderful. It's more to me, whenever I watch them in something, whether it's Matty at Glastonbury or Louis in Stranger Things, I'm incredibly proud of what they're doing. But I'm more proud of the men that they have become. And, you know, despite lots of things, you know, we all do our best as parents. There's no rule book. We all make mistakes, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I'm very proud of the men they've become. But what I am mostly looking for is, are they okay? Are they mentally okay? You know, I just, because I've had such a run-in with my mental health, and life is a lot sometimes for everybody. And I am just, are they okay? Are they enjoying this? Are they okay? And they seem to have their head screwed on. I'm very lucky that from being little, sometimes they could be little shits to me, of course, and continue to be so. But I've never had anybody not say they were a joy to have. Whereas when I talk to Lincoln's mom, Jenny, and she says, I say, so what was Lincoln like as a child, Jenny? You know, and she'll go, well, I knew I had him. Put it that way. I knew I had him, right? And when his dad sadly died young, Lincoln was only 14 and his brother was only 7. And his mum really had nothing. She'd never worked. You know, she was from a very working class family in the East End of London. And so she said that Lincoln was going to have to leave school at the earliest opportunity and get a job. You know, that's what you did to help. And she said that she rang this school and said that this awful thing had happened, and could Lincoln leave at the end of term? And the headmaster said, he can go today, Mrs. Stanley. He went to the school and he was stood at the gates with all his stuff out. So, you know, whenever he went to play at a friend's house, he very often wasn't asked back, put it that way. But I have two children that were always asked back. So I'm quite pleased that they're still getting asked back.
Absolutely. No, well, when I met, I spoke to Louis and, 18 months ago, 2 years ago, he was absolutely fantastic. He was absolute joy to have, as have you been as well.
Oh, thank you, Tom. I know I've gone off on a tangent, but I know that if I listen to a podcast, it starts being about one thing, and the ones I enjoy are when they go off. You're very, very easy to talk to. So I probably said too much.
No. Everyone likes it when I don't talk. So I don't.
Well, that is always the way. That's what Lincoln always says. he always said, because he's a salesman as well as an artist, you know, he sells his own stuff. Very few artists can sell. And he says, you know, if you're going for a job, or you don't say anything. Let them talk. Let that, you know, they'll get more out of you. So, well done. I'm thrilled that you do this. It's great.
Thank you. And I guess just finally, I mean, people will probably obviously know, probably follow you more than they follow me, but where can people find you, keep up to date with everything?
I'm mostly an Instagram person. So I think I'm easy to find. I don't understand. I say to my friends who've got these ridiculous handles, we can't find you. If you have a ridiculous handle, we can't find you. I am at Denise_Welsh. Welsh is with a C, not an S. I'm very easy to find. And that's where most of my social world goes on. The occasional rant on X, but not very much. I don't do Facebook, but my Instagram goes onto Facebook. But I there's too much about someone at school who's just got divorced who I don't really care about. So on Facebook. So I'm happier on Instagram. And I have times when there's a flurry of activity and then times when I'm not so busy on there. But I do seem to spend 2 hours in the morning scrolling. I mean, I've got to stop. It's an addiction.
That's bad.
I tell you, man, it's true. You know, you're driving in a car for 2 hours and it seems like forever. You look at your watch, it's 8 a.m. and the next minute it's 10. And you've watched other people's toddlers running around a house saying funny things for 2 hours. I mean, it's just bizarre. But anyway.
Oh, well. But thank you. Thank you so, so much for coming on and doing this. I know you've been incredibly busy with everything.
I'm so glad that we've done it.
Thank you so, so much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to the Hirschsprungs Hour on UK Health Radio. You can find me on Facebook under Tom's Hirschsprungs Podcast or Instagram on Tom's_Hirschsprungs_podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show and we'll bring you another episode soon.